This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And today is a very, very special day because we have a very special guest. I am so excited about this because we are talking about San Francisco, and I lived there, and I loved it, and I wanted so much to do this book, but Rita Moreau, as everybody knows, she almost kicked me out of the studio because our guest is Sheldon Siegel, and Rita is here.
Yes, and I'm excited.
Hi, Sheldon.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Okay, well, we're happy today. Boy, you know, so often we get together for coffee, and Rita's always talking about your books. So
I love Sheldon's books.
Yeah, so we were so excited to get book 15. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. What did you think about it, Rita?
What I absolutely love about it is the characters. The characters that I've grown to know, like they're my neighbors. So I absolutely enjoyed the book. And Deal Coin is dead.
Yeah, boy, oh boy, is the company dead, because the name of this book is Dead Coin. And Sheldon, it's a great book.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, it means a lot hearing that from you, Rita, because you're such a talented author yourself.
Thank you.
Well, we love you. We really, we get such a kick out of your books. And exactly what Rita said, that for us, it's like seeing family. I mean, we know Rosie.
And we know, Mike.
I always say Rosie and Mike. It's a Rosie and Mike book. Some people, you know, go around saying Mike and Rosie. But for me, right from the very beginning, it just popped in my head. I automatically thought of Rosie because I love her.
And I absolutely love Sylvia. Oh. She is quite a character.
Well, you see how we can just talk about
we know them. We know the family.
Well, that's kind of what I'm hoping for, that everybody will want to check in on the whole family, you know, every year or so. And they're real to me. You know, people write to me and ask me how's Sylvia doing and how's Sadie's dog and, you know, are Mike and Rosie going to get back together? And, you know, that's what you're hoping for, that people will get an emotional attachment to the characters.
Well, you've achieved that. And with Dead Coin, it is also such a timely book. I mean, it comes out, I don't know. This was before all of this big collapse. So tell us about Dead Coin.
Yeah, this got a little weird. The premise of the book is that a crypto billionaire would be murdered at Salesforce Park, which is this upscale area in downtown San Francisco. And Mike and Rosie, who are with the Public Defender's Office, Rosie's San Francisco Public Defender, they would represent a homeless guy accused of killing the crypto billionaire. So I got the idea for this book last summer when crypto was flying high and everybody was trying to get in, and people were making millions and billions of dollars. And I thought, well, the premise of the book should be, what could happen if a crypto company lost like $40 billion overnight and everybody who invested in the company was mad at the founder, you know, and he turns up dead. Okay, so I get three quarters of the way through this manuscript, and in November of last year, this company, FTX, a big crypto company, does in fact lose $40 billion of value in a couple of days. And the guy got arrested, and, you know, it was this huge disaster. So it's the first time I've ever written a book where I got, you know, midway through it and real life events overtook my story. Now, I didn't change the story, but I did add a few lines at the end where Sylvia, your favorite character, said to Mike,
yes,
you know, I told you that crypto was a hustle.
Well, it is just, as I said, it is so timely. It is a subject most people don't understand anything about crypto anyway. Because, I mean, the concept of people losing money, crypto money, it's like...
Like Monopoly.
What is it? Do you understand it? With your research, did you finally figure out what in the heck is going on?
You know, I've tried like a dozen times. When I wrote this book, I really did try to figure out what they were selling. And I still can't figure it out for the life of me. And, you know, I think we're transitioning. It reminded me a lot of the late 90s when we had the big dot-com boom,
yes,
and that imploded. And, you know, at least there were some survivors out of that era. And, you know, now we have crypto, and I think there will be some remnants of that that will remain. But the next gold mine looks like, you know, AI, you know, artificial intelligence. And, everybody's, you know, taking whatever money they had left out of crypto and putting it into AI. And there's something there. I don't know what it'll look like. Maybe I'll write a book about it somewhere down the road.
Well, you know, I've tried to figure it out, crypto. I don't understand. Sometimes they'll show pictures of them like a factory, and it's a crypto thing, and I think, what are they making? There's nothing. It's numbers they're juggling around. But certainly your character here, that was interesting. I did not really understand about the Salesforce, what do you call it, a park now?
About 30 years ago when we had the big earthquake, the old bus terminal in downtown San Francisco, right near the ballpark and, you know, near the, not too far from, you know, the Transamerica building and stuff, they decided they needed to replace the old bus terminal. So they built this magnificent four-level, it's a bus terminal in the basement. There's room for trains that they'll eventually extend down there. There's retail. And on the top, they built this beautiful park. It's like four blocks long and one block wide, and it's filled with green areas. It's kind of like the High Line in New York, but bigger and wider and fancier. You know, it's not just for walking. It's a real, you know, it's a real park in the middle of high-rises. So it's a beautiful area. Unfortunately, you know, because of COVID, a lot of the buildings are not very populated at the moment, but that'll come back.
So,
I decided after my last book, where all the scenes were all in the Tenderloin, where it's homelessness and COVID and fentanyl and everything, I wanted to do something more upscale.
Well, it sounds nice. You know, I really didn't know about it. You can see how long it's been since I was in San Francisco. And I actually went and looked at some pictures of it, and it looks very pretty. You know, I don't know, as you said, nowadays, who goes there? Anyway, it's sort of a private park, right? Or it's a public park, but it's not... they don't let homeless people sleep there, do they?
Well, they, you know, it's open to the public during the day, and it closes, you know, at like 8 o'clock at night. But anybody can go up there. And if you can, you know, if you're homeless, like the guy in the book, I mean, if you could sneak up there before they close and find a spot in the bushes.
Well, see, I wasn't sure you could do that, but obviously you figured out a way to get this guy in trouble and to give Mike and Rosie something to work on here.
Yeah, but I mean, if you folks want to come visit San Francisco, it's definitely worth seeing this park. It's magnificent. It is now. I mean, when I moved here 40 years ago, it was Skid Row, but that area it's like a city within a city now. It's very nice.
Oh, well, you know, I as a matter of fact, you know, I told you where I lived, and I used to work for Booz Allen, not far from where this park is.
Yeah.
And it was, in those days, it was very nice. It was, in those days, I could walk without any problem you know, but I think that's changed. But that's why, I mean, one of the reasons I love your books is I get to sort of look at things, and because you write so beautifully about places in San Francisco, even if they're not beautiful, but I get to, you know, sort of have a little reminiscing about San Francisco.
And if I can say, on Sheldon's website, he has a part of your website, if you're visiting San Francisco and you want to check out these eateries, go to Sheldon's website.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, please. All the restaurants are real, except for Mike's uncle's saloon that I made up.
That everybody looks for.
That everybody looks for. But everything else is real. And, you know, I try to make San Francisco a character in the stories and take people to places where the natives go, but the tourists often don't. And incidentally, by the way, it is perfectly safe to come visit San Francisco, and everybody should come because it is still the most magical place in the world. We have rough neighborhoods like every other city, but, you know, don't get all your information off Twitter and, you know, and social media.
Google.
San Francisco is it's alive and well and doing great. And you should all come see us.
I do. Walk in Golden Gate Park. That was one of the things that I loved. And the Japanese garden there. Oh, those are all such fond memories.
It is still spectacular. And it's even better now. They just put in a big park at the foot of the Presidio. At the top of the Presidio, overlooking the Golden Gate Bridge. It's called Tunnel Top Park. And it has the best view in town of the Golden Gate, the whole bay. They had redone the streets leading to the Golden Gate Bridge, and you can walk from the Presidio across the top of the tunnels that they put in all the way down to Fort Point and the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's just spectacular.
Well, you know, in this book, I just love, of course, as I said, for me, it's Rosie always. I just get a kick out of Rosie. And tell me, have you ever considered running for office?
Mayor of San Francisco.
Public defender.
I give all the politicians here a lot of credit for taking it on, because like most big cities, San Francisco is impossible to govern. I am not qualified to do that, and I'm not a defense attorney. I'm in real life. I was a corporate lawyer for 40 years, so I'm not qualified to do criminal work. And it's kind of funny because, like, I get mail from people on death row saying they've read my books at the San Quentin Library, and would I be interested in helping them with their death penalty appeal? I was writing back and told me that's a really bad idea.
That's funny.
That's great. So when, you know, we know these characters, as I said, and you've developed them through these 15 books. I love how you're able to really weave in the story about, you know, about Mike's background and about everybody's relationship. You do it so in such a nice way. It's just part of the story.
Absolutely. And I always find Pete to be a very interesting character also, along with Sylvia. But he's always there, and he's just always got Mike's back, which I think is great. That's what a brother should do.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, the next book, Pete's going to have a bigger role. And, you know, he's the guy you want. He's the guy you want standing next to you if you got to find some information. You never ask him how he found it.
No.
Well, for my listeners who might not know the relationship between Mike and Rosie, explain it just sort of quickly so people can understand who they are and why they are so interesting to us.
Yes, well, Mike and Rosie met at the public defender's office about 30 years ago. Mike had come off some time being a priest, which he wasn't very good at and didn't like doing. and he'd gone into the priesthood after his brother died in Vietnam. And Rosie is a native of San Francisco as well, and she spun out of a bad marriage. And she and Mike met at the public defender's office, immediately hit it off. They quickly got married, had a daughter named Grace, and then almost as quickly got divorced. And they were very good. They've always been very good at working together. They've never been too good at living together, although after about the third book, I decided they would be a permanent unmarried couple. So they have lots of baggage in their past, but they are fundamentally really good people. They're the people you would want at your side if you got into serious trouble. And later in the series, after they practiced law together in private practice for a few years, they go back to the public defender's office, which is kind of where they should have been all along. And a little deeper in the series, Rosie is elected San Francisco's first Latina public defender. And Mike becomes the head of the felony division.
And, of course, they also have this relationship, friends with benefits, and so they've got two kids.
Yes, one they had when they were married and one they had after they were married. Grace, their daughter, is now in her 20s and working for Pixar. And their son Tommy is a sophomore or a junior at UC Berkeley, which is my alma mater and my wife's alma mater. So I don't make anything up. You know, all these characters are based on, you know, real people. My daughter-in-law graduated from USC Film School, although she doesn't work at Pixar. And I must confess, you know, Rosie sounds a lot like my wife Linda. And like Linda, you know, Rosie's always right. But Linda is not Hispanic from San Francisco. She's Jewish from Santa Rosa. So.
And she's very talented, very talented. She does quite a bit.
Yes, she is. She worked for George Lucas for many years and worked on a lot of big movies doing computer graphic shots. So she's the brains behind our whole operation. She nowadays she does all my cover art and all my online marketing and stuff, which is a big job.
Yeah,
I'm just a stenographer. I just do it.
And of course, you've introduced a cat in
Wilma.
Yes. Well, okay. I got true confessions here. Okay, Wilma. We had a cat named Wilma, very sweet white cat. Whose heart problem finally caught up with her, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. So Wilma lives on as the stray cat who has now moved into Mike's apartment.
Oh.
And so we look forward to that. And I have another cat who we got at the same time as Wilma named Betty. And Betty's sitting on my desk here.
Betty keeps you company.
Betty keeps me company. Betty just turned 19, so she gets to do anything she wants.
Absolutely.
And then the other pet in the book, Luna, the Keyshawn, the big dog, Nady's dog. Well, in real life, one of my former colleagues was Nady Nikanova, who is not a defense attorney. She's an antitrust attorney, and she had this beautiful dog named Luna. And when Luna died a few years ago, I promised the real life Nady that we would make Luna a character in my book. So I have two deceased animals.
They live on. They live on.
That's right. And everyone in Sylvia's Mahjong group is named after a real person, too. All readers of my books, and all well north of 85 years old now.
Wow. That's
well,
awesome. Yes.
We see that you're having fun. And one of the things Rita likes about your website is that you have... You have advice there, and recently a lot of my listeners who participated in NaNoWriMo, they ask these questions, and they can find that right there on your website, questions that they want answers to.
Oh, it's great. It really is. I would encourage interested writers or prospective writers, definitely take a peek.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you find that helpful. For those aspiring writers out there, you know, it's a really good time to be a writer. You know, there are no barriers to entry anymore. You can, you will get your book published. It's really hard to make money doing that. Because there are so many books being published, but and if, you know, folks listening in want to chat about it, you feel free to email me at Sheldon@SheldonSiegel.com, because I talk to a lot of published and pre-published writers, and there are a lot of opportunities out there.
Well, I love that, the support that you do give writers, and it's wonderful because it is. You know, the wonderful thing about writing is, in February, I had a guest on, Eugenia Lovett West, and she celebrated her 100th birthday here on Joy on Paper, and she had just written a book about cybercrime at the age of, well, she wrote it when she was 99, and she did research into cybercrime, much like you did research here for Deadcoin into cryptocurrency, and she's 100.
Oh, isn't that great? She's working on another book?
Yep.
There you go.
That's it. She's doing one about a spy in the Revolutionary War. So that's the fun thing about being a writer. And Deadcoin, really, as I said, for all my listeners, if you want, Sheldon doesn't explain what Deadcoin is. I mean, what cryptocurrency is. But he makes it so exciting to find out who in the world killed this great tycoon sort of get this idea of what's going on in this cryptocurrency world.
Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting that you take the reader through the courtroom process also.
Oh, I love that.
I do too.
Nobody writes courtroom better than you. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have a lot of fun with that. It has a certain cadence that it goes really fast once you're in the courtroom.
Yeah, I love
it's
that.
It's really odd because, you know, I've never handled a criminal case. I've never been in court on real business, but people seem to think I know what I'm talking about.
Well, you do.
And it starts off with a lovely case. I really like that case.
That's a real case.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, explain that case.
Okay, so another true confession is I open most of my books with some screwy small-time case to give the reader a hint that Mike and Rosie are essentially small-time defense attorneys who represent, you know, small-time criminals. So this book opens when a dancer at a strip club goes into court with Mike and wants the judge to allow her to take off her ankle bracelet while she's dancing at the strip club. This really happened. I changed the names, but I didn't change much else.
Oh, my.
And the stripper says to the judge, "I can't bedazzle anyone while I have this thing on my ankle." And the judge looked her right in the eye and said, "Your motion is denied. Go back and bedazzle yourself. Next case."
That was such a great opening.
Oh,
you're
it
right.
Was.
It sets the tone for the story. You know what's coming. That we're going to have fun right away. I read that first chapter, and I said, "Oh, well, like
you could
always."
Picture her in the courtroom.
keeping us waiting. I knew she was going to turn up at the last minute, and then a stripper it's very visual. You can really imagine her with that ankle bracelet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a visual.
Not that you did any research to double check that, what it would look like. I'm not that you would do that, but you certainly.
I did not do any on-site research because if I did, Linda would kill me. But the club where she works, the Gold Club, is a real place. That's all, and it's right in the middle of, you know, all where the tech guys all work now, and they all go there for the lunch. They have like this award-winning chef who makes this, you know, fantastic chicken buffet lunch. And
wow.
It's not a secret.
Well, I think it's so funny. I thought that was so good. And well, it's, as always with you, all of your books are so good. And this is book 15, and I know you're going strong on 14, because the problem is Rosie and Mike are in your head, and they're not going to stay there.
They're going to be knocking on your door.
they're always talking to me. I when I was working at the law firm, I tried not to tell people that I was talking to my imaginary friends all day.
Well, again, you know, Sheldon Siegel, we think you're wonderful. We talk about you. I mean, we'll go out to lunch, and who are we talking about? We're talking about you,
Sheldon.
For goodness sake. My goodness. You're fantastic, and we are so very happy and very very proud to have you here as a guest on Joy on Paper. And Rita is going to do a special book buzz for you, and I'll be playing it on the program every once in a while, just to keep reminding people that Dead Coin, the new Mike Daly and Rosie Fernandez legal thriller, is available, and it is fantastic. And again, thank you so much for joining us today, Sheldon.
And thank you, Sheldon, for all your help.
Oh, thank you so much. You guys are terrific.
Okay, so bye-bye for now, but you'll be back as soon as the next book is out, okay?
Okay.
All righty, thanks. Take care now.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, isn't he wonderful? He's adorable.
He is.
Okay, I'm going to play a book buzz, and Rita's going to say goodbye because she has to run and do
a Silver Snickers class.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello, this is author Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper by The Rivers of Babylon by author Mary Glickman. A South Carolina island in the summer can be heavy with expectations. The heat seeps into your bones. Far out to sea, you know a hurricane might form. You never know for sure. As you sit on a porch drinking a tall, cool drink, your mind might wander, or it might just slow down to a stop. Why think when you can listen to the birds? Mary Glickman's book, By the Rivers of Babylon, opens up on a bridge. A drawbridge. It's stuck open. Beautifully symbolic, as is much of her writing, the reader has time to wonder about a young couple whose car has Massachusetts license plates. It's packed up full of baskets and bags. Looks like they are moving to Sweetgrass Island in South Carolina's Low Country. For a minute, the reader will get a tingle. What would happen if that old bridge wasn't fixed? What would happen if that young couple would just turn around and hightail it out of there, lickety-split, and head back up north? But the bridge is repaired, and Joe and Abigail Becker head to the house she inherited from an aunt. Their Boston family and friends don't think they'll last through the summer. But there's something about the South that will seep into their bones. The sweet twang of banjos and bluegrass. The smells, oh, the smells of the South, jasmine and barbecue. Mary Glickman is a master wordsmith. She creates atmosphere with every click of her keyboard, and characters must dance in her head. Out of the mist, she creates a character like Billy, a celebrated pitmaster and womanizer, a character worthy of a Faulkner novel. Mary Glickman's writing is both sublime and compelling. By the Rivers of Babylon is shocking and unexpected. Partly a love story, partly a mystery, the twist and explosive events will keep you turning the pages. But it's so much more. In true Southern writing style, she digs deep into her characters, discovers the good, the evil, and tells an intriguing story of love, passion, and in the end, wisdom. By the Rivers of Babylon by Mary Glickman is available online. For more of my suggestions, go to our website, www.radio-joyonpaper.com. Buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I am so happy to welcome Frank Anthony Pulido back to Joy on Paper, and the name of his book is Rehearsed to Death, and it's a Domestic Partners in Crime Mystery. Hi, Frank.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, great. Well, I told you last time you were on, I said I'm going to have you back as soon as the next book is out, and here you are.
It's been a fast year, I tell you.
Wow. And I love the cover of this book. I mean, it is such a winner. It is so beautiful.
Thank you so much. I think it's a lot of fun, and, you know, it's interest, and I think they always do a great job with the covers at Kensington, so this one is right up there.
Exactly. And the name of the book is Rehearsed to Death, and it includes in there a play. So tell us about the domestic partners in crime. You have two people who are domestic partners in life and in all of the fun stuff that they get involved in. You get them really involved in some fun mysteries here. So why I love this book for many reasons, of course, is that it's also set in Detroit.
Yes, it's a fictitious suburb of Detroit called Pleasant Woods. My partner and I, we live in a town called Pleasant Ridge. Nearby, there's a town called Huntington Woods, and so I figured, how fun would it be to just mash everything together, mix it up, make it fiction, but for people who live around here, they know what I'm talking
and
about.
And throw in a little Royal Oak there. And as I mentioned to you that when I grew up in Highland Park.
Oh, right, right, yes.
So on Glendale Avenue. So I know that area well, and I just enjoy it so much. I enjoy talking about Detroit. Most people, when I say, I really love Detroit, they'll look at me and they say, what? You know, but I loved living in Detroit. At that time for me, in Highland Park, it was so beautiful and it was so wonderful.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I hate to say, oh, it's making a comeback because it's been years now, but it is, you know, it's a great town. We have a lot going on. All you really need are some good restaurants and places to go and see theater and concerts, and your mortgage is half the price of living in some other big city.
And Detroit's always had that, when you say food, because we always had such wonderful food in Detroit, eclectic assortment of people. Greek Town was, that was the destination.
Oh, yes, yeah. You know, it's still there, and lots of, you know, restaurants owned by Top Chef contestants, and we went to a great one. A guy, they brought him in from Chicago to open his own restaurant, and it, you know, competes with anything you'd find in those other bigger cities.
Well, so for this series, of course, it's a nice mixture of, explain your two characters. They each have their own sort of backgrounds and the story of what they do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're a couple, they're domestic partners, they're a couple. They were living in New York, one is an actor, one is a writer, playwright, author, and they decide, much like my partner and I, why are we living in this expensive town when we can move to Detroit and buy a nice house with a yard and get a dog or two? And they have this opportunity to have their own home renovation TV show. They buy this house that they fix up on the first season of the TV show. And in this new book, they're on hiatus from the TV show. And they decide to return to their theatrical roots. And they produce a play that the writer has written and the actor is going to star in. And unfortunately, from the get-go, things aren't great. The director is a very pompous, arrogant man with a British accent who has dreams of directing a show and transferring it to Broadway. And he wants to do it all his way. He makes a lot of enemies during the rehearsal process, and he eventually ends up strangled to death by a very long scarf
I'm
that
sorry.
He likes to wear
it's not
and
funny.
Flail around.
I shouldn't laugh, but
it's
having
a cozy mystery, it's humorous.
It's a humorous.
It's, yes,
it's a humorous strangling.
Yes.
I mean, we need to have a body. It's a cozy mystery. But
yes,
having this background of the theater background, I love this. I love working in the theater. It was so much fun when I was not on stage. Only once did I get to be on stage, and that was in Fiddler on the Roof, and I got to be one of the villagers. But being in the theater is so much fun. So you have this background, and you put it into the book, which makes it really, I think, a lot of fun. And
yeah, and, you know, you write what you know, and I haven't had a chance to be in a play and involved in a play in so long. So for me, it was a lot of fun to go back to that world and show readers the backstage drama and all that goes on.
Oh, it's so wonderful for anybody who has, if you have not been in the theater, you really have missed something, because there's so much going on behind the curtain, and it is so
right.
much fun. And that tingly excitement you get when you're putting on a show, and it's for everybody, and how people work, even, let's say we have people who sometimes you might not be simpatico, but when it's time to go on, when it's time to get that show going, you work. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful chemistry that happens. And of course, sometimes you do have a director. And I had to laugh about the directors. I actually was working backstage, and we had a director not unlike this director.
Sure. It's funny because it's true.
It's true. I mean, he was such an egotistical. I mean, he didn't have a, he had a Boston accent, and he thought he was better than all of us. Well, he was sure he was better. He did not think, and he probably was, because he did come from a wealthy family. But he was like, so much like this. I got such a kick out of it. I think you wrote this beautifully.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I'll just share with your listeners. I based him on someone I actually know, someone I worked with. And for me, it was great fun to get that little bit of revenge.
Cathartic. Very cathartic.
Yes. You know, I don't advocate killing someone in real life, but if you can put that character in and, you know, get rid of them.
I know the feeling.
It's very rewarding.
I know the feeling. I actually... I'm working on a film script in this sort of similar thing, where I'm going to have this cathartic thing where I kill off 8 lawyers. it's so much fun to be a writer.
I can
isn't
tell
it?
You're having fun doing it.
Yeah. Just I get to think of 8 different ways, and you only had one way. But it's a lovely mystery, and you, of course, the thing about a cozy mystery, you have this fun of sort of planting Easter eggs, getting people a little confused, who's good, who's bad, and
sure.
So you had lots of fun with this.
I did, very much, and I'm so glad I was given this opportunity. I've actually just recently completed writing the third book. The partners are going to take on renovating a house that is rumored to be haunted. It's going to come out in Halloween of 2024, so I hope I will talk to you again about that one. And hopefully the series will continue. People will find it and they'll read it and they'll tell their friends. And
well, from, I mean, really, the minute I read your first book, I got a kick out of it. And I remember telling, I think it was Larissa Ackerman at Kensington. I after I finished reading it, and I said, you know, because I always read the books before. I read the books, let's just say, before I agree to interview somebody. And the first book, of course, was Renovated to Death. And I love that. Well, I love those kind of things where you take an old place and renovate it, because I had that experience in England. I moved to England and I bought a 400-year-old cottage and I renovated it because they had covered 400-year-old cottage. They'd bricked up all the fireplaces. And they
You wonder why.
And they put acoustic tiles. They put acoustic tiles over the beams. So you can imagine what I had to go through taking all of that and bringing it back to its, you know, glory. And so I get a kick out of that kind of thing. So when I read that book, Renovated to Death, I said to myself, oh, this guy, I mean, he's got it. He's got the right characters. And I was so thrilled when they came back to me, Kensington, said, he's got the next book. And I was the first one to say, he's got to be, I've got to have Frank back on the program, because I love your writing. And that's,
well, I appreciate it,
you know,
so much.
It's so exciting when you come across an author. You know, I read a lot of cozy mysteries, and I love Kensington, and they send me so many. And so it really has to sort of stand out now for me to take a book, because I have a choice of anybody, so many authors, but I just felt that there was something special about your writing, and I was right, and I'm glad that you have the third contract. I think it's going to be a nice long running series.
I hope so, because it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. These characters are a younger version of my partner and myself, so it's always fun to like take what we've gone through and give it a little twist and put it on them and see how they deal with things.
And the nice thing is, you know, you keep it light and sort of light and bright. And this idea for the little theater, you know, this production, I thought was just spot on.
Well, thank you. I hope others will agree, and I hope folks who aren't really familiar with the theater will get a glimpse into a world they might not know, and maybe they'll give it a try. I always say, you know, everyone should be in a play or work on a play at least once in their life, whether it's a professional ambition or just for fun, because you said it, there's that camaraderie and that teamwork, and it's like playing sports. You know, you can't do it without one person missing. Everyone has to work together. And I think it's just a really great way to come together and do something fun and entertaining and rewarding.
Exactly. Well, I think now that, you know, we're past the pandemic, that we can get together. I really, you know, productions, theater productions, don't have to cost a lot of money. You can put on theater. You can put it on a play in the park.
Just anywhere.
You know, anywhere, and you can have so much fun. And I particularly like when young people are in the theater and put on these shows, because it's such good experience for them to learn this kind of, if they're not into sports, they learn here at teamwork. It's exactly the same. You all work together, and you, at the end, you have so much fun, and you're so proud of yourself.
Yeah.
And you learn what you're good at too. I mean, you don't have to always be the star of a production, but that those backstage people, boy, they're just as important, and they can have a lot of fun. So I hope that one of the things that people will come away with, exactly as you said, you know, look at your local theater, look at your local organizations. If you have a organization you belong to, put on a play for a fundraiser.
Yeah, it's a really great thing to do, and I recommend it to everyone.
Well, you obviously found fun in this. And again, I just want to thank Kensington so much for giving you another contract, because I want another book. I want JP and PJ to come back.
Well, they will be back soon.
Okay, well, that's keeping you busy. And again, I want to tell people, this cover, Kensington always does great covers. Carol J. Perry is one of my favorite authors at Kensington, and her covers, she does Witch City Mysteries, and their covers are always spot on. And for this one, this cover is just, it's like it tells a story in a cover. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Well, I think you're fantastic, Frank. I think you've done a great job with this book, and I'm so happy. You know, I'm always happy to see authors doing well and getting ahead, and I think that with this one, you know, it's just fun, and I'm so very, very, very happy that you are on the program today.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be back, and I'll talk to you anytime you'll have me.
Okay. Well, you take care, and have lots of fun in Detroit. Is Sanders still there, the chocolate?
We don't have stores, but you can still find products. Yeah, I just had a bumpy taste for Mother's Day. I got one for my mom because she loves it. Oh. And I think I even mention it in the books. I work it in there.
You worked it in, but I wasn't sure if any of the one on Woodward Avenue? No.
Sadly.
Not there. I love that store so much. Oh, and I love that you named your publishing company Woodward Avenue. I think that's terrific.
Yeah, you gotta pay the homage where it's due.
And everybody, if you didn't, you know, in those days, you know, Detroit, they wanted to, the car city, right? And so they wanted to impress people, so they built this beautiful, big, wide highway, Woodward Avenue. And I remember how
I believe it's the first paved highway in the country.
I think so. And it was so beautiful. It was being very wide. And I will say, a couple of times, my friends and I, we were like four cars in a row. And we didn't go fast. We did the exact opposite. We went slow, very slow, and built up people behind us. We were terrible teenagers. But we had fun, and Woodward Avenue always brings back, the Detroit Institute of Art. I love that place.
Yeah. I had some friends in town from Chicago the other day, and they went down there, and they had never been, and they said it was one of the best museums they've ever been to, and they've been to Paris and London and New York.
It is. I knew that. I spent my whole junior year of high school there because I skipped school almost every day.
Well, it's a good place to get lost.
Yeah, so everybody at the museum knew me. That's where I would go, because my problem when I was a junior in high school, by that time I had already read 5,000 books, and there wasn't much I could do in high school other than Latin. I did Latin and chemistry and physics, because I couldn't do that on my own. But the rest of the time I spent at the Detroit Institute of Art, which is a fantastic place. Just for that, it's worth taking a trip to Detroit. Plus, as you said, the restaurants, because there are so many.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, Frank Anthony Pulido, it's so nice to talk to you. And your website is just your name, Frank Anthony Pulido. So that's real easy. And Pulido is P-O-L-I-T-O. I like that name. And it's easy to remember. And again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You have been a joy.
Thank you. Happy summer.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. I just love the theater. I love the theater. It's so much fun. I didn't realize, it's funny, when I was young, I had the opportunity, actually, to get on, you know, in front of the cameras or on the stage, and I was shy. And until I sat in this chair here in Tantalk, studios here, Tent Talk Network studio, until I sat in this chair behind this microphone, I was very, very shy. I always took the position in the background. I worked backstage in the clubs I belonged to. I was always the one organizing things. I was always behind the scenes, Very shy person. And of course, so much of my time was spent reading books, so I would be in a corner reading books. Something magical happened here when I sat. I don't know. Maybe it's Big Ed in the control room. I look at Big Ed. You know, I'm looking through the window, and I see Big Ed, and I'm at this microphone, and I'm not shy anymore. Now, I'm going to walk out the door. I'm not shy anymore for anything. You could put me on, you know, a major stage, and I wouldn't be shy. So this is the magic of this magic microphone. I don't know. I'm going crazy. Anyway, I'm having lots of fun. And it was so nice to talk to another Kensington author. And as I mentioned, was so nice. Carol J. Perry's newsletter came out. And for anyone who is interested in reading books about Florida, her Haunted Haven mystery series, she just finished the third book in that series, and that's set right here in Florida and in our backyard, and it's really fantastic. And so you should check that out. You can go to her website, and it's just Carol J. Perry. You can go there and find out about her books. But she's a busy author. I've been talking today about authors who really really produce. And of course, I'm so very, very proud of Rita Moreau, who came into the studio today especially to talk to Sheldon Siegel, because she loves Sheldon Siegel. I mean, she knows these books so well, and it's just such a joy always to be with her. And I'm very grateful that she does the book buzzes here on Joy on Paper, and I will be playing more of them. And we really enjoyed this one for Mary Glickman, By the Rivers of Babylon. It's a fantastic book, a real Southern drama. You will really enjoy it, and a little Shades of Faulkner, a really great book. So you can check that book out too. So there's lots of things going on in this world, lots of exciting things. And it's, my goodness, we're heading into a long weekend. Everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. And he saluted me, and I saluted him. Oh boy, oh boy. I should have a uniform with, you know, I should be a general. Oh, I would be so great. Oh my goodness, I would love it. Anyway, everybody have a very safe and happy weekend. If you're anywhere, just be safe, but also take a pencil and paper and start writing, because you can write anywhere. Sheldon Siegel started writing on the ferry boat between Sausalito and San Francisco. That's all. He just found time. He was working as a lawyer, and then next thing you know, he's selling millions of books, millions and millions. And you could do it too. You just have to start writing. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3